CBSi in the world. I'm John Batchelor with Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host and friend. And we're very pleased to welcome Charles Burton. There is a headline in the Globe and Mail, a dominant paper in Canada. China's looming decline could be a threat to the world. Could be. Charles, a very good day. Could be. Good heavens, let's go to Bloomberg Asia right now. China boosts stimulus by allowing banks to keep smaller reserves. China adds support by developer funding by easing loan uses. Hedge fund stars who got China wrong are paying a big price. When stocks crash, China turns to its national team. A crash, by the way, translates, according to Bloomberg, into losing $6 trillion worth of asset value in the markets these last months. Charles, a very good day to you. Welcome home from Asia. It would appear from the Globe and Mail headline that Canada is now on board with the fact that China's in trouble. Is that accurate? Good evening to you, Charles.
Good evening. Well, thank you for the welcome back. I think that, you know, it's evident that there are serious problems in China, and that Globe and Mail article emphasized the demographic decline, where China's population has gone down by 2 million people, according to state statistics last year, the year before by 850,000 people, that the population may, you know, in the next 25 years, go from 1.4 billion to a bit over a billion. So there's a sense that, you know, things are seriously wrong, and there are going to be too many oldsters and not enough young people to support them. You know, you have your situation with four grandparents and one grandchild. That's a common phenomenon now, if in fact they have even the one. So, you know, you put that on top of mismanagement by a panicking regime, and you see a kind of rapid spiral down, and it's hard for the world not to be aware of this and to want to respond appropriately. I think the main concern is, if there's an enormous loss of confidence in the Chinese economy, does that mean that the Chinese people will have an enormous loss of confidence in the existing repressive political structure? In other words, will they start to question why China has such a yawning gap between the communist elite rich and ordinary people poor, or why the leaders are so, are tolerant of so much corruption? It just seems that you get the economic decline, which is becoming absolutely undeniable, and one wonders what the concomitants are. And there is speculation that, you know, like a lot of regimes, when they see the end days coming, start to lash out in irrational ways. And would we see some sort of action being taken on the South China Sea and Taiwan as a result of the desperation of a regime that is trying everything to stave the decline, including the, you know, very ill-advised economic measures that you have just mentioned?
Gordon, you have a question for Charles.
Charles, we're talking about demography. One detail that has not received very much publicity is a very wonky one, but let me mention it nonetheless, that China's total fertility rate, which is the average number of children per female who've reached childbearing age, is now close to 1.0.
Yeah.
If you were to project that out, it would mean that by the end of the century, China would have probably about 400 million people, maybe a bit fewer. That means it would be bigger than your Canada, but on the other hand, maybe not that much bigger. Really, what we're talking about is perhaps a complete failure of society. It's not just economic problems right now. It is the complete failure of Chinese society if these demographic trends continue. How do you see this playing out? Because obviously this can't continue as it is, because if it is, China just disappears.
Yes. And I mean, you know, how does the economy work when, as the speculation is, that by 2050, we're looking at 500 million people past working age, supported by 700 million who are still of working age. Mr. Xi's solution is, of course, ideology, and has been stressing the need to actively cultivate a new culture of marriage and childbearing and strengthen guidance on young people's view on marriage, childbirth, and family. I mean, you know, this kind of stuff is not going to wash with young people who are concerned about their economic futures much less to bring a child into it. And, you know, it's the consequence of the tragic one-child policy that was implemented in 1980 and sustained up until 2015 that has resulted in a, you know, disproportion of a higher rate of men than women because of selective abortions, abandonment of girls, infanticide, and in general, human tragedy. You know, that age group is my age group. I graduated from university in China in 1982, just after the policy came through. And most of my friends have one male child. You know, there's something seriously wrong going on there when the Communist Party tries to interfere with nature.
Charles, I want to stay with the economic story for a moment, because it is not at this point clear to me that foreign investment won't return to China. I know that the reporting now is that it's fled and that hedge fund managers are apologizing as they return the money to their investor class, having failed. But at the same time, this can be cyclical. To your measure, the China bulls of these last 20 years, have they been permanently scarred, or are they waiting for the cycle to come back to buy the bottom? Can you tell?
I mean, certainly people have a kind of, I don't know, path dependency and nostalgia about the allure of making big bucks out of China. But when the Premier Li Qiang was in Davos and reported on the growth rates of the Chinese economy, these statistics were widely discredited by economists who have a, you know, a more realistic grasp of where the Chinese economy is going. And so I'm inclined to think that it's over. I don't think that any Western investor that has any kind of sense would see China under current conditions as a place to put their money. Not only the demographic decline and the general, you know, decline in the real estate sector and high rates of unemployment among youth and all of these, you know, negative indicators, but the way that the Chinese Communist Party is trying to address it through bringing in the state and more nationalization and more state control, not to speak of the increasing phenomenon of Western investors who go to China, protest against some violation of their contractual arrangements with the Chinese regime, and then are refused exit from China until the matter is resolved. In other words, until they give in. All of these factors, I think, discourage us going back to the future, so to speak, and seeing that there still are opportunities for foreign investment in China. I'd be very surprised if we see a massive return of the investment that's been leaving in this past year.
Gordon, over time, you and your colleagues have made the point that Xi is not an economic leader. He is a security leader, and that he is not alarmed by the falling markets as long as he is confident that he can increase the security. That means a surveillance state. Is that still true, Gordon?
I think it's still true, John. Certainly there has been a prioritization of security over concerns about economic growth. That has been evident during Xi Jinping's leadership. And as he's accumulated power, we have seen this trend become much more prominent. I don't see any signs that it's changed. And, you know, we'll have to see, because as the Chinese economy starts to fail, then there could very well be the technocrats taking over. So that is one of those to be watched for events.
You have a question for Charles.
Charles, China's problems can be traced back to Xi Jinping's leadership, because he's either caused them or he's exacerbated them. We talk about cyclical factors, as John just mentioned. Do you think that leadership is cyclical, or do you think that after Xi Jinping, we'll get somebody else of his ilk?
I like your idea of the return of the technocrats. I mean, certainly Mr. Xi is going to great lengths to eliminate the Deng Xiaoping opening and reform, you know, let people get rich first and marketization of the economy, period, in favor of really depicting himself as the successor to Mao Zedong, who, of course, you know, didn't agree with any kind of markets or capitalism of any kind. So I think you're right. I think that the tendency would be towards Mr. Xi dropping from power and technocrats trying to salvage China's economy from the damage that he has done since he came into power in 2012. And I mean, naturally, he's concerned about security and these other factors, increasing China's international reach, because with the economy in trouble, this is the only way that he can salvage his regime and keep himself from very negative consequences if, in fact, he loses his position as the dictator of China and militarily, economically, and socially.
Charles Burton is a senior fellow at the Center for Advancing Canada's Interests Abroad at the Macdonald Laurier Institute. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, writing at Gatestone Newsweek at The Hill. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.